Here we go. I would now like to call to order the Shoreline City Council regular meeting for Monday, August 4th, 2025. Will you please join me in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Would the clerk please call the roll call?
Mayor Roberts. Deputy Mayor Mark.
Present.
Councilmember Ramsdale.
Present.
Councilmember Scully.
Present.
Councilmember Adamasu.
Present.
Councilmember Poby.
Here.
Councilmember Robertson.
Here.
Is there a motion?
I move to excuse the mayor.
Second.
Thank you. Moved and seconded. So excused. I would like to proclaim August 5th, 2025 as National Night Out for the Community in the City of Shoreline and encourage residents to join their neighbors for an evening of food, fun, and connection at one of the neighborhood block parties being held tomorrow evening. I would like to invite Kate Ledbetter, Parkwood Neighborhood Association board member and National Night Out block party host, up to the podium to accept the proclamation. Whereas National Night Out for Community is observed annually on the first Tuesday of August, and whereas the City of Shoreline recognizes the critical roles neighbors play in each other's lives and throughout the community, and whereas the City of Shoreline encourages residents to continue building stronger relationships with their neighbors to enhance community responsiveness, resilience, and safety, and whereas the City of Shoreline provides support to create stronger community connections block by block. Now I therefore, talking as Mayor Laura Mork for Mayor Christopher Roberts, Mayor of City of Shoreline, on behalf of the Shoreline City Council, do hereby proclaim August 5th, 2025 as National Night Out for the Community in the City of Shoreline and encourage residents to join their neighbors for an evening of fun, food, and connection at one of the neighborhood block parties being held. Thank you.
I just wanted to thank the City of Shoreline for providing a space for the neighborhoods to gather. This is our fourth year in a row after COVID, and our neighborhood is just buzzing with excitement. Hopefully we expect to have over 100 neighbors in attendance this year. So thank you for giving us the space to gather.
The next item is approval of tonight's agenda. The executive schedule for tonight is being postponed and removed from the agenda. If there are no objections or comments, the amended agenda is adopted by unanimous consent. Is there a motion? Oh no, this is one of you, excuse me. Report of the city manager.
Good evening, council. Join us tomorrow for the last karaoke in the park of the summer. Come to Cromwell Park from 5:30 to 8 p.m. and sing your hearts out. This is a family-friendly event. Karaoke is free and open to everyone. Shoreline will celebrate National Night Out for Community tomorrow, August 5th. There are over 70 block parties scheduled to happen throughout the week city from 4 to 10:30 p.m. This is a great opportunity to connect with your neighbors and public officials at parties in your neighborhood. We hope that everyone has fun conversing with neighbors and building meaningful community connections. Please note that there will be 51 street closures tomorrow afternoon and into the evening, so you may see many closed roads signs. Plan ahead, join in, and have fun. This Wednesday, August 6th, There will be a concert in the park event at Cromwell Park. Come out and enjoy a musical performance by Cool Babies. If you're a fan of Talking Heads, this is a show you must see. This concert is free and family friendly. Bring a low back chair, picnic blanket, and dinner, and enjoy the show. Also happening this Wednesday is another Energized Shoreline workshop here at City Hall. This free workshop will provide information on heat pump technology, energy savings, and available financial assistance. Residents can attend in person or online via Zoom. You can learn more about these workshops by visiting shorelinewa.gov/goelectric. We have one upcoming Shoreline Walks event this week. Join us on Saturday, August 9th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. for the North City History Tour. This walk will be a 3-mile trek throughout the North City neighborhood, stopping to check out the 185th Street Transit Center and making many stops along 15th Avenue to learn about the history of the area. Learn more and see other upcoming walks at shorelinewa.gov/shorelinewalks. And finally, I have a couple of public reminders to share. The Planning Commission will meet this Thursday, August 7th in the City Chambers at 7 p.m. The next council meeting is August 11th at 7 p.m. The Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Services Tree Board meeting is Thursday, August 28th at 7 p.m. And for more information about these upcoming meetings, please visit shorelinewa.gov/calendar. That concludes the City Manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. Ellington. I would now like to invite Shoreline Police Chief Tommy Collins up to the podium to talk about the King County Sheriff's Department Explorer Program, a volunteer program for young adults aged 14 to 21 to participate in community events and police training.
Thank you, Council. I appreciate the invitation tonight. As many of you know, the community outreach for Shoreline PD is a important part of the work we do. One of those outreaches is to the youth of the community. We had a goal this year to start an explore post. I'm proud to report that we accomplished that goal this year. I'd like to introduce Sergeant Ian Campbell and Deputy Sarah Lacey, who is our lead explore advisors. Without their input into this program, I don't think we could have got off the ground. I'd like to invite them up here real quick to introduce our explorers.
Hello, Council. Thank you very much for allowing this opportunity, and thank you for support for our program. I'd like you to introduce you to our Shoreline Police Explorers. The Explorer program is available to youths ages 14 through 21. Here in Shoreline, we have ages 14 through 19. They learn our tactics. They will learn more about what we do in regards to first aid. They will go to their own academy, which is what we're preparing for right now. They will learn investigations, and they are, most importantly, learning to be leaders, positive role models for the youth in our community. They will attend your community events, and they will be those leaders that we expect them to be. So far, they've fulfilled all of our expectations and are a wonderful group. This year, this August alone, I expect that they will have put in approximately 15 hours each for their volunteer hours in their training, attending regular meetings, and community events. So we're very, very thankful to these individuals and their work for our community.
So, Council, remember these faces. You should see them a lot here in the upcoming events going out through the rest of the summer and around the police department. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for coming. Are there any council reports this evening? Councilmember Adamasu.
Thank you. I visited the Hunger Intervention Program at their Shoreline Library site, which serves summer student lunches. The day I was there, there were 56 people being served. The Hunger Intervention Program provides meals to our neighbors, young and old, through programs including over 100,000 Healthy Pack school meals, 43,000 shelter meals, and 30,000 senior meals. I also attended the King County Flood Control District Advisory Committee meeting. We reviewed the draft budget, which will be voted on by the board in November. Also attended the King County Cities Climate Collaboration meeting, where we reviewed the draft 5-year strategic climate action plan. Thank you.
Councilmember Scully.
Thank you. I took a tour of the Santa Cruz County dump because I was down visiting my dad and stepmom, and when you're on council, there's no such thing as a vacation. But it was apropos because we're going to be talking about solid waste tonight, and they very, very aggressively require sorting out everything. They had piles for painted wood, piles for unpainted wood, piles for this, that, and the other thing. I watched a commercial hauler come in and first get yelled at, which was not great, and then ultimately get cited for trying to dump a load of unsorted garbage in the general garbage area, which it turns out was for very, very few items. So I'm going to continue my campaign of encouraging us, presentation later tonight, to be more aggressive on the businesses and the commercial haulers to do the sorting, because, you know, as I witnessed, it can be done, hopefully without the yelling I saw, but, you know, kindler, gentler shoreline.
I attended a walkthrough of a glass recycler in Seattle, so I too is getting ready for our meeting topic today. As I understand it, they are one, if not the only, glass recycler in King County, and they separate glass into clear glass, amber glass, green glass, et cetera, et cetera. They also make, in essence, like sandpaper-like material with some of the fines. So it was interesting to see what was there. What concerned me is that previously they were busy, as I understand it. They were closed 5 days a year, and other than that, were 24/7. And now they are 5 days a week, 20 hours. So I'm wondering if why, and I'll be investigating that. Thank you. That concludes the council reports. Next on the agenda is public comment. This is the portion of the meeting where members of the public may address the City Council on the agenda on items or any other matter pertaining to city business for 3 minutes or less, depending on the number of people wishing to speak. This total public comment period will be no more than 30 minutes. If more than 10 people are signed up to speak, each speaker will be allocated 2 minutes. Ms. Smith, how many individuals have signed up to speak?
We have 3 total, 1 in person and 2 online.
Therefore, they will get 3 minutes. The clerk will call the in-person voter speakers first, and the remote speakers will be called on second. When it is your turn, please state your name, city of residence, and any organization represented. Please be advised that your testimony is being recorded. Ms. Smith, will you please call the first speaker?
Matthew DeAngelis.
Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Matthew DeAngelis. Lived in the Meridian Park neighborhood for almost 4 years now. I'm not going to cover a lot about why I think we should remove parking mandates, because that's been said in previous council meetings, it's been said in planning commission meetings. I do want to stress, though, that removing parking mandates does not remove existing or future parking. It just allows business owners and developers, homeowners, to decide for themselves how much parking they want. You can ask yourself, if you were to remove parking minimums entirely right now, would Costco eliminate any parking tomorrow? I don't think they would. Costco understands it's in their best interest to allow people to drive to their business. So we don't need to be worried about some sudden Armageddon of, you know, no parking available if we eliminate parking mandates. I want to push back on any sentiment that we should slow roll this. I acknowledge a sudden change in general can be hard, and sudden change can be very scary. And so it might feel natural to say, oh, let's roll this out slowly over 5-10 years. But as you all are painfully aware, I'm sure, permitting, financing, building, these are all very slow processes. Anything that you do tonight or next week is not going to be felt overnight. You will wake up tomorrow and Shoreline will be exactly the same as it is today. You'll wake up at the end of the year, you'll probably notice hardly any change at all. Even the most affected neighborhoods in Shoreline, the ones around transit that will be most drastically affected by removing parking mandates, it's going to take years and decades to really see that play out. There's the old saying that the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, the second best time to plant a tree is today. Parking mandates are a mistake of a bygone era that was focused on car dependence. We shouldn't have done that to start with, but we can't go back in time and undo that. What we can do is do the right thing starting from today. To stretch that metaphor a bit, removing parking minimums is planting a seed. It's a seed for those vibrant, walkable communities that we want, with small businesses, with more housing, and with more trees. So please do not delay in planting that seed. I urge you to remove parking minimums entirely, and thank you for your time.
Next is Tom Ling.
Mr. Lane?
Looks like he's unmuted. Oh, he's got his hand raised.
Oh, am I unmuted?
You
oh,
are,
I
yes.
Sorry. I was looking for the button. My name is Tom Lang. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I live in the Parkwood neighborhood. I spoke in February in support of removing parking minimums, and I still feel very strongly, which is why I'm here tonight, taking time out of a busy schedule, putting a baby to bed, because I really do urge the city council to eliminate the parking mandates. It is, as Matthew eloquently stated, it's a relic of a bygone era. It's not the future Shoreline that we want to live in. And I think that there is a lot of good that can be done if the local government gets out of the business of telling private property owners how much parking they need. The market will tell us that. We don't need to be doing it for them. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity if we can get out of the way of the market and let them build the amount of housing that they need and the amount of parking that they need in our city. So I urge you next week when this comes up for a vote to stay the course as nearly everyone in February was in support of removing the parking minimums. There's been time, public comment, and I am here again 6 months later, again stressing and urging the need for the elimination of parking minimums. So thank you.
Thank you.
Gabrielle Sneed.
Hi, I think I'm unmuted. I'm Gabrielle Sneed, and I live in Meridian Park in Shoreline for about 4 years. I may be a little bit repetitive. I'm advocating the removal of all parking minimums immediately. Again, while that might sound like a big change, the impact is necessarily going to come over time. The amount of parking won't change overnight. It'll change slowly, as construction and permitting are inherently slow. Eliminating these parking minimums only puts the decision of how much parking is needed in the hands of business owners, property developers, property owners, the people who have the most knowledge about that. Choosing to spend money on parking should be a choice when we're shopping, like shopping for a house. People who value parking will continue to buy property with parking, and people who don't drive should be able to buy property without having to pay for parking. Eliminating mandated minimums is inherently low risk and slow moving, so we should start today. For a quick review of some other highlights, removing parking minimums may be a way to lower hardscape needed for property development. Property minimums are for cars, not people. To meet climate goals, we must encourage other forms of transportation. Parking minimums encourage and contribute to urban sprawl, which contributes to much more habitat destruction and tree loss than developing inside of an existing city. And of course, removing parking minimums encourages housing development, which Shoreline desperately needs. In Shoreline, we have people, homes, green space, and so much vehicle infrastructure. I would rather have more green spaces with more homes for more people at the quote unquote cost of less space dedicated to cars.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to the council tonight? Seeing none, I'll close the public comment. Next up is the consent calendar. Is there a motion?
I move for the approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
The approval of the consent calendar has been moved and seconded. Will the clerk please call the vote?
Councilmember Poby.
Aye.
Councilmember Adamasu.
Aye.
Councilmember Ramsdale.
Aye.
Councilmember Scully.
Aye.
Councilmember Robertson.
Aye.
Deputy Mayor Mork.
Aye. The next item on the agenda is discussion of the King County Solid Waste Division's 2026 rates. Paige Sheed and Sarah Broomer, excuse me, I hope I didn't mispronounce your name, will join us at the presenter's table. And we'll introduce our guests from the King County as part of it. Thank you.
Good evening, Council. My name is Paige Sheed, and I'm the City's Environmental Services Program Manager.
And my name is Sarah Broomer. I'm the Environmental Sustainability Coordinator.
And we're here tonight to help present on the King County Solid Waste Rate Proposal, but we'll turn it over to the King County Division staff to lead the presentation now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us. My name is Rebecca Singer, and I'm the Director for the Solid Waste Division. And my colleague, Dave Pierce, is here to present on the rate moving forward. We just want to thank you for, one, allowing us to come and speak with you today, and as well as allowing us to do this in a virtual mode. It was kind of a short notice type of thing for on our end, and accommodating our need for this is really appreciated. But with that, I'm going to hand it over to Dave, who's going to run through our rate today, and then we will be open for any questions that you may have.
All right. Thank you, Rebecca, and thank you, everyone, for having us. I'm going to share my screen for our rate presentation. Let me prep that. Okay. Here we go. Okay. The beginning. All right, there we go. So, here we are. You know, our goal, of course, is our vision of solid waste is to achieve zero waste resources and enhance the environment through collaboration and innovation, such as our RePlus program, which, is really pushing for recycling and different ways to utilize products. Right now, we're servicing 37 cities and as well as unincorporated King County. 8 transfer stations, 2 rural drop boxes, and then we also oversee 9 closed landfills, which, the maintenance of those and the expenditures for those are also part of our operating fund. And then we have 1 open landfill right now, Cedar Hills out in Maple Valley. Okay, here we go. So, majority of our revenue comes from disposal. And we recognized back in 2022-23 as we were developing the RePlus program and we're pushing for more recycling, which is, contrary to disposal where our revenue comes from. So one thing we instituted in 2024 was called a fixed annual charge. And so that's like a base fee that the haulers, our commercial haulers are charged. And then any commercial hauler that receives a portion of the fixed annual charge does receive reduced tonnage rates compared to those that do not. But it's just a way to mitigate the impacts that increased recycling has on our revenue stream going forward. So far we're in the, second year of the fixed annual charge. And it's going quite smoothly. We've just calculated 2026 and in discussion with the cities on that. Next slide. This is our rate structure. So you can see that for commercial revenues, the fixed annual charge, $23 million out of the $125 million in revenue that we receive from commercial customers. And then we have Cellfall bringing in $35 million and then other $5 million for our total revenues that we see in our system. Okay. And this is where the revenues go. This is a good, transfer stations make up, taking care of transportation, transfer stations and then disposal, that's 62% of the expenditures or 62% of that revenue goes in support of that. We have our regulatory compliance, our RePlus efforts around $10 million, 5%, and then we have hazardous waste programs, regional planning, so forth like that. So down at the bottom, down here, I wanted to highlight the yard waste is 1% of the revenue. And I'll touch upon that in a moment when we get down into the meat of the rate. Here we go. We found that the RePlus program has we're anticipating extending the life of the landfill by 2 years, which is substantial as before it started. So now we're looking out to like 2040, which is great news, and hopefully potentially even more success with the program, push that out a little bit further. Okay, and this demonstrates what's going on with our rate, what's driving the rate increase, if you will, our rate increases. So our CapEx or capital expenditures are increasing from $34 million, the debt service with that, to $99 million in 2031. And that there are several large projects. The development of Area 9, which is our last area or cell at Cedar Hills. Permanent facilities. So right now, the facilities, the shop, all those things are actually located on top of Area 9. So those need to be moved. So that's another large capital project that needs to occur. And in this forecast, we have the North Regional heard of being called NERTS, but that capital expenditures for that program are also in there. So you can see that as those capital expenditures increase, transfers from the operating fund to cover the capital fund therefore increase, and so our expenditure growth is increasing. So that's one of the main driver is our capital program. And this is a landfill capacity, NERTS. As you can see, our acronyms, SCRTS and NERTS. South County Regional Transfer Station will be open next June, June-ish timeframe. And then this is a really busy slide. So, but there we go. Let me go to the next. So let's get into the meat of the presentation with 2026 waste. A rate proposal. Traditionally, we do a two-year rate, but in this case, when early on when we did the presentations for 26 and 27, while we had support for the increase for the 26 rate, we were encouraged to reevaluate our plan, our capital project plan going forward, to ensure that we bring the best rate forward. And of course, we want to avoid double digits. And so the plan changed this year to, we'll submit a 2026 rate, and then we will immediately after the, once that's a rate is if adopted, we'll immediately go back and begin work on a 2027 solid waste rate proposal. And then hopefully after 27 for the 28-29 biennium, we'll get back on doing two-year rates. So for the city of Shoreline, this rate, this 2026 rate, would, for a person having a 32-gallon trash can, the estimated increase in their bill would be 79 cents a month for a 32-gallon can. Overall, it pans out to 71 cents for the whole system, but for Shoreline specifically, approximately 79 cents per month. And here we go. We can see the commercial rates, you know, as we submitted, we're climbing, keeping the fixed annual charge constant until 2030. We have tipping fee going 8, 8.5, 8 again, 8 again. So, you know, it is our responsibility and our due diligence to go back and you know, look at the work that we've done and ensure that the best numbers possible come forward. So this is where we're at right now. And we see the cost allocation, excuse me here. So one of the things to point out, and I said I was going to touch upon later, was, like, for instance, yard waste. So yard waste, the cost of our yard waste collection is 2%, but what it brings in is 1%. And so you'll see that in 2026, yard waste, we have both yard waste and cell fall are going up by 12.5% as we try to bring the revenue and the expenditure closer to a net zero. And so they have a larger increase than the commercial tipping fee going forward. So that's one of the, that kind of usually stands out to folks, is they see that 12.5%, they see the fixed annual charge of 15, and then the 8% for the commercial tipping fee. So we're just really trying to, you know, align expenditures and revenues to make things as fair and even as possible. That is the rate presentation right now. And then this way we have plenty of time for questions. I can stop sharing and then I could I've lost VPN, sorry. Stop sharing.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce.
Yeah.
Ms. Scheid, excuse me, I mispronounced your name. Do you have a presentation as well, or should we launch into questions?
This was the only presentation.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Councilmember Poby.
Thank you. First of all, yeah. Great presentation. I think it's direct to the point. The rate allocation model is what I'm just curious about. Briefly, if you can tell us how that is done, the variables that dictates.
Sure. Yeah. Well, the rate model, we look at our line of business and we look at anticipated expenditures in the out years. And like, for instance, we look at the capital projects coming towards us, and we know that the majority of the capital projects will be bond funded. And so then what we do is we start working with FBOD, our Finance and Business Operations Division, and we find out what that yearly cost will be for the bond financing. So that's a major component of our operating expenditures. In addition, the operating fund, you know, does transfers to our capital fund, to our landfill reserve fund, because we need to build up landfill reserves. We have a capital equipment replacement fund, and then we have a landfill post-closure maintenance fund. So we we rely on a system called PRISM, where all our capital projects are kept, and we look at the out years forecasts for that to determine, you know, so that's the main input into the rate model. Then the rate model, of course, looks at our operating fund outside of all those transfers. And what do we need to do to maintain business? Do we have the correct number of FTEs in order to achieve all the capital projects that are coming our way? We do use TLT, which is a term limited temporary. On a capital project, you can have a TLT for up to 5 years. And so we know that the amount of the work and projects will slowly start decreasing as we get closer to closing Cedar Hills. And so we have large number of TLTs, and then we have our career service positions. So, and then finally we have tonnage, the tonnage forecast. What do we anticipate coming in? What rate do we need to come to help cover the anticipated expenditures? We do have one component that we have within our fund. It was called the Recession Reserve Fund. And what that was monies set aside to mitigate rate increases. So let's say that expenditures are just going to outpace revenues, and we want to try to always stay below double digit rate increases. And so we could call upon these reserve funds and say, okay, we're going to use a recession reserve to cover the gap in between the two. And we've done that. And now the recession reserve is at zero. And so we will need to build into our rates going forward small contributions to build up the recession reserve again. So hopefully that is a sufficient Reader's Digest version.
Yeah,
okay, sorry about that.
No. It's detailed, and I appreciate that. And I think everybody does. I'll make a quick second question is, saw the $34 million to $99 million for the capital expenditure increases. That's about $10.8 million per year for the next 6 years from 2026. Yeah. Okay. And I also saw the reserve for the landfill. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much is in there, but I was just curious, if you are putting away enough money, why must this giant amount be added to the rate, the projected rate?
Well, the landfill reserve fund, last I was told, needs to be around $350 million by the time we close the Cedar Hills landfill. And so we can't afford to draw from that fund to mitigate the rate, because then we would never meet the liability obligation that we have when the Cedar Hills closes. And in fact, we're being encouraged to contribute more to the landfill reserve fund to further increase its balance. So we allocate what we call the recession reserve, which is just a line with, you know, an expenditure reserve line within the operating fund, but it's not associated with the landfill reserve fund. It's landfill reserve is all for post-closure maintenance and regulatory compliance.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mayor, Deputy Mayor.
Councilmember Scully.
All right, thank you. Hopefully in the Reader's Digest Senior Edition version, in the RePlus program, what does the term mixed waste processing refer to?
Yeah.
So mixed waste processing is when we have material come in from any hauler and you actively sort the material for those things that are recyclable versus the stuff that is not.
All right. So, and is that a load of what would go in the black trash can in Shoreline, that's just general collection. You're sorting out the recyclables from that, or that is a load that is recycling to start with?
It's a load that would be, it would just be your general waste.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so thank you for doing that. I am not surprised that multifamily organics gives us exactly 4 months. And I think that's a problem up and down the line, but I'm hoping we can focus on that both at the city level and at your level if you can. Because we have done education and requests and working with folks for a long time, and I think it's time we set some requirements and start mandating that that happen, particularly on multifamily, but even the single family, we're sort of there, but not entirely. I was a little displeased to see that the yard waste rate is going up, and I understand it's to match the expenses to the income from it, but I'm really hoping we can encourage and reward folks who do sort out organics from non-organics and charge those who don't a little more. And if you're disposing of a lot of solid waste, your rate should be going up. So a small thing, and I don't have a program, but I have been sort of advocating for it for a while, and I'm hoping we can all work together and figure out how we can get that number in particular up as much as possible and see if we can't get, you know, a couple of years out of landfill life out of multifamily organics.
I appreciate that.
Definitely.
Councilmember Adamasu.
Hi, I have a quick comment for the city and waste, and then a quick question for Mr. Pierce.
Yeah.
I just want to applaud the city's continued efforts. Most recently, the city's partnering with Bold Reuse to bring reusable cups, dishes, and utensils to the Celebrate Shoreline event this year. This will keep hundreds of pounds of waste out of the landfill. So we each need to do our part to keep waste, as much waste as possible, out of the landfill, which leads me to a question for you, Mr. Pierce. The area cell 9, the last cell in Cedar Hills, what is the estimated date, you know, projected that for the closure of that last cell?
Good question. Right now, we'll say close to 2040. However, I recently attended a meeting with our director, DNRP director, and he had mentioned something that I hadn't heard before, which I thought was really forward thinking, and that was that potentially we would want to look at not filling Area 9 all the way, leaving some room in there or a potential natural disaster. So, and I thought that was, it was, blew my mind. It was, I hadn't even thought of that, but he was like, you know, there is potential that we could suffer, you know, a catastrophe here in the Pacific Northwest and need that space for debris and things like that. So I think it's something that we're going to explore, and in doing so, that would then, you know, change the final date. But right now we're estimating around 2040. I just wanted to applaud Director Taylor for thinking about that, because it made so much sense when he presented it, and I felt foolish for not thinking about it myself.
Thank you. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Councilmember Robertson.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. My thoughts are aligned very closely with what Councilmember Scully already shared, and I don't really have any feedback on the rates going up. I feel like that's just that's inevitable considering the limited amount of space. You know, we don't have endless space to put our trash, and I am more interested in learning about how we are doing, how are we doing as individuals, businesses, and, you know, residential, multifamily, in getting better about reducing our waste. Ultimately, I think that should be our goal, and that we just continue to focus on that. I'm a regular user of the transfer station. I really appreciate having that service in Shoreline. especially for yard waste. So I echo the same thoughts about that increase going up. I wondered what had triggered that, so thank you for explaining the need to balance it out. But anyway, thank you for the work that you're doing, yeah. And let's all please try to reduce our waste and impact on the planet.
Yes, definitely. I appreciate everyone's input today. It's great.
Thank you very much. Director Singer, I appreciated you attending the glass recycling walk with me and getting to see that avenue. And I know the city is looking at, the county is looking at ways to increase recycling. I know you are as focused as we are in trying to lower the rate of landfill and up the rate of what gets processed in a different way. Can you talk a little bit about your views on what kinds of things, looking forward in the future, the rates might do to help encourage that?
Yes, a little. Considering 3 months in, I'm still getting my feet wet with some of this. However, just as you know, someone who lives and walks on this planet, one of the first, you know, we really do need to start with education. I don't think folks are well aware of not just what they can and cannot recycle, but they're also not aware of the overall impact. And I'll equate this similarly to wastewater. If you're in the world of wastewater, what you quickly learn is that people flush their toilet and they don't think twice about where it goes, how it's treated, and the impact of what they add to the system by pouring things down the drain, for example, the impact that that has on our ability to actually treat the water in a way that gets it to a quality that we all expect. So similar with trash. You put your curbside out or you go to the transfer station and you leave it in somebody else's hands, but most folks are not aware of then what happens. And if they could better understand, for example, going to the glass factory or the glass recycling facility, if they could better understand the impact that it has on the overall system. And at the glass recycling center, what we saw was a lot of mixed waste within that. So that would be another mixed waste kind of process where there was a huge amount that was going back to the landfill. So helping folks understand how to separate their materials and what materials can be separated, but better yet, having a standard across the state so there's no confusion, no matter what city you live in, as to what can be recycled or not recycled. In addition to that, providing better opportunities for people to be diligent about their recycling. Not everywhere that we go provides that. I thought about it just the other day when I was at a gas station and I took some trash out of my car to put into the receptacle. However, there was no ability to recycle anything there. So I took my recyclables home with me, but why is that just not offered? So we have a lot of thinking to do as a region and as a county on how we want to help educate people, bring folks up to speed on what it looks like, this whole system, what it looks like, and then provide the resources to better equip them to be better stewards.
Thank you. Ms. Shai, do you have any questions that you would like to ask?
We spoke with King County prior to the meeting, so we have no questions.
Perfect. And that the education is something that I think you all are focused on. It's, as you can tell, it's really important to all of us to do that. That we really appreciate that we now have the RAP Act passed, so there should be some hope there. Just to make sure I understand, the rates, there's a couple things happening with the RAP Act and then the natural gas component of the landfill. Are those represented in the rates this year, or will it be future rates that we will see that?
I apologize. Could you
So there's some changes that have happened recently. Mm-hmm. One is you used to flare the natural gas out of the landfill. You're no longer doing that, or I think working on no longer doing that in the future.
Yes, correct.
And the RAP Act is coming, and I'm wondering where is that shown? Is it worked into the rates for 2026 that you're reporting on, or is it worked into the rates for farther in the future?
It's very conservatively in the 26 rate because you develop a rate like almost a year in advance. And so we weren't sure where we were going to be at in situation. So landfill gas revenues was just very minimal in the 26 rate. We will be now that there is, a very positive outlook for moving forward with landfill gas revenues, we'll be able to take that into account further, and that hopefully will help us keep, and even drive down the rate as we do the work going forward now. So in some senses, it was a good idea to do a one-year rate because the landscape has changed, and so we can take these additional factors in play.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Councilmember Rento.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. The question just kind of occurred to me when Ms. Singer was mentioning about educating the public. And so, a while ago, plastic bags were no longer allowed in the recycle bin. So I'm wondering, how did that education policy or process go? What were some of the lessons learned from that maybe could be applied in the current day? And also, as somebody who actually, once plastic bags were not allowed, my wife and I became Ridwell customers. So we recycle our plastic bags with Ridwell. So I'm kind of wondering if there's been some, what went well, what didn't go well, how has compliance been, and if there's poor compliance, how has that compliance been enforced, or lack of compliance been enforced, and then basically how can some of those lessons learned be used in the future? Thank you.
Yeah, I don't have an immediate direct answer for you on that, and I'd like to be able to follow up. I'm not sure how we managed that when that rule went into place. I do have two colleagues in the audience, and our deputy director is there, and I don't know if either one of them have an answer to this. However, we will definitely find it and get it back to you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. If there's no more questions, we'll move on to our next topic. Thank you so much, Director Singer and Mr. Pierce, for coming, and for our Shoreline people for being here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
The next item on the agenda is discussion of ordinance number 1043, development code amendments to eliminate parking minimums citywide and revise bicycle parking requirements. Steve Safran and Elise Keim will join us at the presenter's table to give the presentation.
Thanks for having us. So vehicle and bicycle parking development code amendments. So this started with a land use policy 3.2, which directed staff to look at reducing or eliminating minimum parking ratios and encouraging flexible parking configurations throughout the city. And this is basically based on cities around the country and, near to Shoreline, eliminating parking requirements. And by doing this, we realized many benefits, such as right-sized parking, potential for the space for more affordable housing, reduced hardscape, and better safety for pedestrians, vehicles, and bicycles. Early in the process, staff came to the council to to get some initial guidance on what we should be looking at. We asked some questions, and council told us to consider removing parking minimum citywide and not just focusing on specific areas. Look at reducing parking minimums for all uses, not just certain uses. Consider electrical vehicle parking the same as any other parking requirements, and also updating bicycle standards to better fit the needs of those users. So the purpose of these amendments really is to eliminate vehicle parking minimums while also keeping design requirements for vehicle parking if it's provided, such as where it's located, screening, and parking lot landscaping. Increase bike parking requirements for new development, and those would be not tied to vehicle parking requirements. It's just a set standard for bicycle parking based on the use for commercial and residential. There's new design requirements for locations, spacing requirements, and bike mounting facilities. Greater flexibility for staff to have administrative departures for these vehicle and bike standards, and really just a lot of cleanup through the code of striking references to parking. Not going to go through the 90 pages of code that is in your attachment, but some highlights is eliminating parking-related decision criteria for permit types such as conditional use permits or special use permits, a updated purpose statement that limits the number of parking spaces, encouraging the use of alternative modes of transportation, providing better pedestrian movement, and really promoting reduced hardscape and increase water quality. Again, striking all of the parking tables that are in the code. Updating graphics, which we still have graphics from King, we inherited from King County days. So this, you know, beautiful new pictures in there with bicycle facilities, locations. And it was said during public comment, but these development code amendments does not mean we are outlawing parking. Parking will still be allowed if it is so desired, but if it is desired, then you have to meet all the design criteria that is still in the code. So the Planning Commission did recommend approval. This is just a discussion meeting, but just saying that we do support the amendments that are in this ordinance. And Lisa and I are here with any questions you may have.
Thank you. Councilmember Ramsdell.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Yeah, I'm very much in support of eliminating parking minimums. I think comments have been made that I agree with, that you know, that they do not prohibit parking. They let the market determine like what level of parking is going to be attractive for home buyers or residents or developers in the community who are providing kind of our much needed housing. It also parking minimums encourage urban sprawl, and we are in a climate crisis. It's not a hoax, and having parking minimums is just going to encourage more urban sprawl and more use of our cars. So I'm very much in favor of this, so thank you. I do have some a question about some of the bicycle parking requirements. I was really glad to see a lot of those in the amendment code. One thing I'm kind of wondering about is, do some of these bicycle kind of racks or parking kind of equipment. Does it apply to, let's say, older buildings? I mean, I know I work in an older medical building in the north part of the city. I have an office there, and that building has no bicycle rack. So when I ride my bike to work, it goes into the office because there's no place to lock it up on the outside. And also, if one of clients who ride their bikes, they have to bring their bikes inside the office as well. So I'm kind of wondering, how are some of these older buildings grandfathered, or or not? If not, then what is available to the city in terms of our staff capacity to bring some of these older buildings under compliance for what the new requirements will be? Thank you.
I mean, generally, there's improvement thresholds that a multifamily building or a commercial building would have to trigger these new improvements when these would be required. So, you know, generally, it's going to be seen in newer buildings or a kind of major rehaul of existing buildings. But yeah.
So in the example of, say, the office building that I work in, with that doesn't have any kind of parking racks or anything like that, would that be something that the staff would just respond to a report that that's the case from a person who works there? Or I'm just kind of wondering, like, what are the processes in place, or if there are any, to get some of these older buildings in compliance? If this is passed, thank you.
Yeah, we would look at, I mean, we would be noticed if a building permit came in for any sort of improvements, but if nothing was happening with your building, your office building, no, the city wouldn't make these facilities happen without some sort of trigger.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Scully.
Thank you, and I'm certainly supportive of this. I sort of evolved from Planning Commission days to when I supported at least some parking minimums to now, basically because we want affordable housing and reduced hardscape and trees, and something's got to give if you're mandating all those things, and parking is the obvious choice. My only concern, and I think I actually answered my own question looking through here, is that we not inadvertently, by sort of going in there with a big paintbrush, eliminate our ability to regulate too many vehicles on a lot. I did find the section that said no more than six vehicles may be associated with the residence, so it looks like that survived. And so my question is just, you know, we get regular complaints, or, you know, fairly regular complaints about folks who use their residential property as a tow yard or do all kinds of stuff there. I just wanted to make sure that by eliminating parking minimums, we weren't inadvertently eliminating our ability to regulate where vehicles are parked and how many vehicles are parked.
We were very intentional about making sure we still had the ability to regulate those types of uses, and we have a number of levers available to us to make sure we can put a stop to that.
Councilmember Onomasu.
Yeah, I just want to thank the Planning Commission for all the work they did, and of course staff. So I also support eliminating parking minimums citywide. I won't reiterate a lot of the public comment, but yes, things aren't going to change tomorrow morning. This is going to be a slow process, and it helps out a homeowner who wants to build an ADU that has plenty of street parking, but now they don't have to put in all that hardscape, or a developer. Their loan they're going to get for that development, it's going to require parking. So I don't want people to fear that there's going to be no parking in Shoreline. So my only two questions, which were kind of answered before the meeting, I had a question about ADA and with loading zones. So my ADA question is, I just want the public to understand, if no parking is required, and a person voluntarily doesn't provide parking, there is no ADA requirement in the law. But if someone voluntarily provides parking, which a lot of the multifamily buildings will be, they will have to follow ADA standards and provide ADA parking. So that was really good to hear. Thank you for clarifying that. And then the loading zone parking. So I see, you don't have it in your summary here, but it was on page 8B79. You changed it from gross floor area per required number of loading spaces to dwelling units. And I didn't understand where the 60 units came in for zero loading zone parking. So is there any more explanation, like how you chose this number of less than 60 units would not require a loading zone? Like, is it data supported, or I'm still confused about that?
And we're talking about on-site loading requirements. So let's start there. 60 was just kind of like we explained in the email, it's the trigger that we look at SEPA requirements, and there were different numbers thrown around, but as ease of administration, that was just the number that was picked. We looked at smaller buildings that have been built around the city, less than 60 units, and that's just kind of where the staff and commission landed on.
Okay.
But
so it was broadly discussed to get to that number. Okay.
It was discussed.
Great.
But there's also recent examples of multifamily buildings where loading is incorporated into right-of-way improvements. So it's not on-site, but in the right-of-way, loading spaces are being provided for when new improvements, such as sidewalks, curb gutters. Okay. There is that curb management being performed, so those spots are being provided, and at least in recent examples.
I kind of tried to look around at other cities and see what they did. So it seems like most people I could find are still doing the gross floor area. Is there a city that has switched it to dwelling units like we're going towards?
So importantly, we do still have a floor area regulation, and that's for any building engaged in a non-residential use. And in speaking with our staff who administer this code, they had been sort of smushed together of residential and mixed use and commercial all in one table. And it was leading to some pretty confusing outcomes and generally no loading being provided. the numbers were just so high. So we intentionally broke it out into two separate tables. So one specifically for if you're doing commercial, then you're doing commercial. If you're doing residential or mixed use, then we're going based on dwelling unit count.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. That was a little confusing. Okay, thanks.
Councilor Member Robertson.
I think just a quick comment. Oh, here comes Councilmember Ramsdell back. I just wanted to echo climate change, not a hoax. And then as I was reading through the packet and thinking about, yes, it's true. We're like, something has to give. We want affordable housing. We want trees. We want all of the things. And parking is something that can give. I totally support this. And I thought by eliminating the minimums, we're saying that developers might have more flexibility. It's not as parking is expensive, some of these other things. So I just kept thinking, we're also looking at our tree codes, and I know it's adjacent, it's not exactly what we're here talking about today, but I just hope that the end result is great. Yes, something is going to give. We're saying parking is going to give, and so I hope we now get to choose to work with developers who are going to take into account the trees that may or may not exist on properties that they're interested in, and be creative about trying to work around them. No, we don't have to provide parking. Maybe we can provide some breathing space for this tree that is pre-existing. So those are just my thoughts. And I know it's adjacent, but you guys are all in the same planning department. So I'll just echo the sentiment that I have on this matter. Thanks.
Thank you. We had excellent comments tonight. I so appreciate it. And it really is a misnomer. It's not really parking minimums. It's saying to the developers and the people who are putting up these buildings that they need to figure out what they need, as opposed to the city mandating it. So I think it's important to switch the framing of this. The other thing I think is really important is for people to understand is the city does now have a parking management plan. So if the meaning that we have enforcement, I should say parking enforcement. So if the developer horribly messes up and put in a Costco with no parking, using that example, I'm assuming that the city will, parking enforcement will, perhaps this is better directed to you, Mr. Ellington, would make that an error they wouldn't want to make.
And I have to apologize. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, my question is that if the developer does not, for some reason, and I'm going to say this should be unlikely, the developer does not understand the parking requirements, let's say for their ground floor commercial, and the result is that people are that there is parking enforcement required because people have no place to park and they are parking inappropriately. Does it ever come back to the developer, or is it simply the people who parked inappropriately?
Steve, yeah, it's going to be enforcement, whatever rules that we have. I don't know.
As far as I know, it would be the people that parked inappropriately.
Yeah.
And so eventually they won't want to go to that business anymore because they're not going to want to be ticketed anymore. So mm-hmm. The idea is if you're going to be doing a Costco, probably need to recognize people will bring their cars to load them full of goods.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that is one of the outcomes of not having any, you know, specific requirements. If they're telling people to park illegally, you know, then that might be a different issue that we can address.
We have one enforcement. I don't know if there's plans for more enforcement
in the
future. They're in the
process of hiring a second one.
Yeah, so
there'll be opportunities to have coverage throughout the day and into the evening. I do agree with one of the speaker's statements that a business that requires parking will do so if they want to survive. But if a business goes into a building that doesn't have parking and it becomes a problem, we would have to get involved.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you again for the efforts that you have put in this. I agree with my colleagues. This is important in the trajectory of the city. If we want to meet some of our goals, it's important to let the developers figure it out as opposed to us mandating it. So thank you. Is there any further discussion this evening? The executive session has been eliminated and will be rescheduled. So at that, I'm sorry.
When this item comes back, how did you want it back?
Councilmember Scull.
I mean, we're going to be in agreement on it, but this is enough of a change or perceived change that I would prefer a very short staff report and an opportunity for the public to comment during the regular public comment period.
Thank you.
Makes sense. Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.